We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by M-Prize Bank, your partner in possible.
Welcome into another 3-Mile Pod. I am John Kurtz, joined as always by Derek Young from K-State Online and Cole Manbeck, former K-State beat writer for the Manhattan Mercury. We are talking about another victory today as the Wildcats win 37-28 over the weekend over the Texas Tech Red Raiders. It was not always easy. Felt like at times, particularly in the third quarter, that it was not going to go K-State's way, but the Wildcats explode late with Adrian Martinez's legs, and they pull out a win to move to 2-0 in Big 12 play and head into Farmageddon week. So you know that emotions are going to be running around here. It's going to be a fun week. But hey, if you're going to Ames or not going to Ames, it's a night kick. You got all day to sit there and drink and get ready. And make sure you stock up on 360 Vodka from Holiday Distillery or Ben Holiday Bottled and Bond Bourbon. If that is your drink of choice, they are great K-State people that have helped us out and supported the podcast here. So please go out and support them as well and make sure that you are ready to go with whatever your drink of choice is for the 7 o'clock kickoff between K-State and Iowa State in Ames coming up this week. All right, well, look, I'm feeling pretty good, all things considered, at the end of the day after K-State beats Texas Tech by 9. I think that's an improving Tech team. I think their defense is much better. I know that K-State rushed for almost 350 yards, which doesn't look great on that defense, but there were points in that game where they played really well, and it seems like Tech is moving in the right direction. But end of the day, DY, I mean, Adrian Martinez continued to play the way that he did against Oklahoma for the most part in that game when he was getting help in particular from his offensive line. And when K-State needed to really close out the game to grab control again after they had lost the control that they had early, it was going back to the quarterback run game to put it on ice.
Yeah, and even without, you know, maybe like an aerial assault, I think what he threw for 240 against Oklahoma didn't necessarily come close to that against Texas Tech. It felt like there was no flaws in the passing game when they had time to unload the ball and kind of survey the defense and pick what spots to take and which ones to not. Only a few passes come to mind where I felt like they could have done more than what they did. I know Cade Warner came open late on a scramble from Martinez to the right where he dumped it off to Phil Brooks, still got the first down. Warner is probably further downfield and open, but Cade was turning the corner again and not necessarily looking for the ball, so I don't necessarily blame that on Adrian Martinez. Another time where I think they had a shot play open with Malik Knowles, and Martinez was ready to unleash it, and that's when he fumbled, when the defender knocked the ball out of his hands and he jumped on it. And so he still hasn't turned the ball over because of that. And then the only misfire from him I felt was when he threw it to the wrong shoulder of Ben Sinnott. Some people got on Ben Sinnott for maybe not tracking the ball right. I think Martinez just threw it to the wrong shoulder, and that was probably his only glaring miss on the day. So even without a statistical explosion through the air, I still felt pretty good about that part of the game. As long as they keep moving in the right direction, they're probably not at this moment when it comes to pass protection, some of the communication errors, some of the chemistry, just some of the, you know, winning your battles up front, they're going to have to continue to work on. Because if we're talking about maybe the biggest question mark moving forward for Kansas State, there's probably things you can quibble about on defense. They haven't been perfect, kind of give up 28 to Texas Tech, 34 to Oklahoma, but getting off the field is what they're doing right, and that goes a long way. But the biggest question mark is probably the offensive line at this point. And some of that's bad luck, right? They're just – it always happens one year, right, where one position group is going to get attacked with the bad luck, with the injury luck, and this year that's been the offensive line.
Well, if you didn't watch the game and you see 116 yards passing by Adrian Martinez, you might think that he reverted back to check it down, Adrian, that we saw in the first three games. But that didn't feel like the case at all in this one, to DY's point and what he was brought up there. Because Adrian was taking shots downfield, and, you know, when they did throw, you know, he made the right reads most of the time. It was really, you know, a couple of the times he dropped back to what DY just said, the offensive line didn't protect him. He didn't have time. He had to throw it away. We talked about heading into that game that Kansas State was one of four teams that hadn't taken a sack in the last three games. And he gets sacked three times in this game. And he could have been sacked more than that if it wasn't for his escapability. I mean, remember the incredible play you pointed out, DY, where he completes it 11 yards downfield to Phillip Brooks and Cade Warner had popped open. I mean, most quarterbacks get sacked there. There's not even a play made. And he gets the first down because of his elusiveness. He has bailed out the offensive line a few times. I remember the three-man rush Tech brought on Saturday, and they got to him in maybe two and a half seconds. And that can't happen with three-man rush. So the offensive line does have to play better. I thought Adrian played just fine, was dynamic in the running game, obviously 171 yards on the ground, followed up previously with 148 the game before, seven rushing touchdowns. Now he now leads college football quarterbacks with 469 rushing yards on the season and is second in the country, including all positions, with nine rushing touchdowns. So he's doing it with his legs, man. He looks good. He only needs about another 130, 140 yards to eclipse his career high in a season for rushing yards that he had in Nebraska. And we know they relied on him a lot with his legs there. Heck, he led the team in rushing yards two of 4 years. So he's been great with his legs. And obviously, the running performance, it was just all about the explosives for Kansas State. That's really what the story of the game was, because they did not move the ball effectively without those explosives. And if it wasn't for that, they may have lost.
Yeah, and I think that's actually kind of a good thing, because they won without explosives the previous three wins. They weren't necessarily an explosive football team on the offensive side of the ball, and that was actually one of my concerns, because you're not going to be able to move the ball every game. Like, you're going to have games where the offense stalls. They're not perfect. They're out of sync for whatever reason. And it's hard to pick up first downs, and your success rate is not impressive. You're just not going to be able to be that effective all 12 games, right? So there's going to be games where you falter, but you need to rely on explosives to win. They were able to do that. That's not necessarily something that is overly sustainable, but you have to have that in your back pocket when you need it. And they did on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, the play, one of the plays of the game to me was Deuce busting out the big run that he had, because I think, was that a 2020 when that happened, or was it even before that? I mean, early second half, Deuce busts out for that really long time.
Yeah, it was 2020, John, and they were under center with a fullback, kind of a different formation that they hadn't shown much in the game, and he busted that.
They didn't show it at all. Yeah, they went under center. First time under center the entire game. Might be first time under center in a couple weeks.
I was just about to ask that. Were they under center at all in Norman?
I don't remember it. That's probably a better question for Fan. But that was definitely the first time in that game. I think the only time in that game. Good time to break it out, but – that was part of the adjustment, not necessarily going under center, but bringing in Wheeler in line and lining up center at fullback or H-back and adding another gap for Texas Tech to account, because that's really when I thought the running game took off. We can say, oh, they incorporated the quarterback run game again, because they did, but Deuce was also finding more gaps and more space to operate, not just Martinez.
Yeah, and they had 10 plays, 10 running plays that went for 10 or more yards in the game. Those running plays accounted for 272 of K-State's 343 rushing yards. Actually, 362 rushing yards, because 19 yards were taken off by sacks. The other 26 designed running plays K-State had, they ran the ball 90 times for 3.5 yards per carry. So 27 yards per carry on the 10 explosives, 3.5 on the other 26 carries, which isn't necessarily a big surprise, because the explosives are going to always inflate the numbers. But it shows how heavily Kansas State relied on the big play in this game. They had 16 plays of 10 plus yards. They had 17 plays of 10 plus yards at OU. In the first three games, they had 24 combined. They now have 33 in their last two games. So certainly picking up bigger chunks of yardage has been key. But they got to clean up. You can't have the five drive stretch where it's fumble and then three and out four straight times after that. They put the defense in a bad situation. I felt the defense got gassed. They just got put on the field too much with the pace that Tech plays with.
Yeah, and I mean on that topic, I know DYU said it's maybe not as simple as just like quarterback run game. It fixes everything, but I don't know. It sure felt like in a lot of ways that was it. I mean, I was screaming for it, like literally in that room over there, screaming for it. And then they ran it and it pops off for the touchdown that Adrian Martinez had. And you know, that started K-State putting the game away. Are we at the point where this is like a pitch count thing? They're worried about Adrian Martinez running the ball too much. He had 12 carries in that game as opposed to 21 at Oklahoma. There was the conversation surrounding Adrian when he came in about not wanting to use his legs as much and be more of a passer. But I just, to me, it's pretty glaringly obvious at this point. They're not going to win Big 12 games without a pretty steady dose of quarterback run. And I've seen enough of this offense to really know that one, I mean, and that's not all just because of the offense's limitations. It's also because of what, I mean, you have an elite guy with the ball in his hands when Adrian Martinez takes off because of what we've seen in those explosive plays this year. And you simply have to use it. But I do understand there being a bit of a dance, especially with a guy like Colin Klein, who knows what it's like to get 25 carries every single week and what that does to your body. So I'm just throwing it out to you. Where do you feel like that is and how they're trying to manage it right now?
I can't confirm or say 100% conviction that played into the idea of holding it back a little bit until the second half, but it wouldn't surprise me because it's only game five. 12 game season, or was that game six? I don't even know where we're at now. Game five. But you do have to take it into account because what you want to accomplish over a 12 game season, not a five game season, does heavily rely on the health of Adrian Martinez, which has been tethered a little bit throughout his career. So I think it has to be taken into account. Maybe they said, you know, we'll go to that bag of tricks, so to speak, more in the second half and close out the game that way, because that's kind of how it unfolded. I wonder if that was part of the calculus. I don't think we'll ever find out that. I don't think they want to reveal the plans, but I wonder if he's going to be some kind of closer, so to speak, more than anything. It was a nice spark to begin the game. You got to remember, when they were going back to pass a little bit, there was two plays where he took a healthy shot, pretty squared up from Texas Tech too, where I think he was a little stunned and had to regroup, and you know, for the ensuing seconds after those plays. So something that they have to be careful with, especially when they know that they are shorthanded on the offensive line. I think you have to take it into consideration.
But think about this, guys. So you've got Deuce Vaughn, 638 rushing yards on the year, third leading rusher in all of college football at all positions. Adrian leads quarterbacks in rushing yards. They're probably the most lethal quarterback running back combination in college football when it comes to running the football. So you would think that how much they've shown that they can be a threat in the running game, that this will open up the passing game more.
As long as you can block.
Yeah, as long as you can protect Adrian and give him time, you would think defenses are going to start cheating up more and more with also Adrian's threat. And it'll also open up holes for Deuce, because look at Texas Tech. You couldn't just key in on Deuce. If Adrian pulled that ball, he can house it. And then also the fact that Adrian is just so dynamic in the scramble game when he evades and gets out of the pocket. The defense, you know, he can do what Patrick Mahomes does frequently and go up to that line, and then he could fling it downfield, you know, and that safety has to come up thinking he might run with it, take off with his legs. It should, in theory, open up the K-State receivers where they're going to be in a lot of one-on-one situations and they need to be able to take advantage of it.
It is. The offensive line just has to hold up against the blitz. But because we saw it against Oklahoma, saw it again against Texas Tech. So, you know, it's a copycat league, they say, right? Not just the NFL, but, you know, in college football, teams are seeing effectiveness of getting after Kansas State via the blitz. They're going to see it throughout the season. They're going to have answers. Coach Klein even said in his press conference afterwards, we have to be able to throw versus the blitz.
Well, yeah, that was what stood out to me from the postgame press conference, was talking about that lull in the second and third quarter where K-State's offense went totally away. that it was about Texas Tech doing a great job with different blitzes and really confusing them and getting after them. So, I mean, that stood out to me, that that is something they're going to have to figure out, and that that is a part of it in addition to, like, hey, just not running the quarterback. Also, Texas Tech did a nice job. And when you have good defensive minds on the other side, I think we all have a healthy amount of respect for Tim DeRuiter, who's Texas Tech's defensive coordinator. They're going to figure those things out. And, I mean, honestly, I know we're not here to talk about next week a ton on this show, or this upcoming week, I should say. But, like, that is a concern to me with Iowa State, because I do think they have not only a pretty good defense, but a pretty good pass rush. So, you know,
best defensive lineman that Kansas State has seen so far this year, that they probably will see throughout the year. I know everyone points to Siaki Ika of Baylor, and Texas and Oklahoma have some dudes too. I don't think they'll be blocking a guy better than Will McDonald this year. I respect him a hell of a lot. He's, you know, maybe 1B to Felix is 1A, in my opinion.
Isn't that Tech kid a pro too, though? One of those Tech dudes?
Probably, but I think Will McDonald and Felix Ndidike Uzomah are in a different stratosphere.
It'll be the best defense Kansas State faces probably this year.
They're better than Baylor's team.
They're going to make K-State's going to have to win via the air, and we'll talk about it more on Thursday's show, but they're sixth in the country and best in the Big 12 in run defense, 2.7 yards per carry, ranked number six nationally. 7% sack rate, which is top 40, 4.1 yards per play allowed, seventh in the country. I mean, they're gonna bring it at K-State.
And I can guarantee you, I'll put out this a guarantee that Kansas State's going to get the best version of Iowa State this year, this season, because they are at home. It's a good program and a good culture that Matt Campbell has created. I think we can at least say that part. They are as hungry and desperate for a win as they've ever been under Matt Campbell, probably, and they are at home. Kansas State will get the best version of Iowa State.
Yeah, it'll be their Super Bowl for sure. I'll throw out one more number, guys, just on Kansas State's season numbers. They've now ran the ball. 66% of their total offensive yards have come via the run. That's number two in the country. The second highest percentage of rushing or total yards coming via the run, number two in the country. 64% of their plays have been throws, which is top 10 in the country and third most among Power 5 schools. So, you know, we talked about this offense maybe changing a little bit, right, with Colin Klein, but they've kind of shifted back. I shouldn't say necessarily shifted back, because they threw it 34 times at OU and 31 against Tulane, but the production is certainly coming via the run.
Yeah, and another thing to add, I would say, I know the amount of plays ended up being, well, if you just look at how many plays they ran on offense, it's like, oh, maybe they didn't go fast. Kansas State went fast that game. There was multiple times where I didn't look up quick enough to see the offensive play, which rarely happens when it comes to a Kansas State offense, and they went so fast that Texas Tech had to call timeout.
Yeah, it wasn't K-State's pace that was the problem. K-State ran 58 offensive plays, which was their average number of last year. Tech ran 82. It was certainly a huge change, but it was largely – you had the three and outs, but not only that, D.Y., three of K-State's touchdowns were three plays or less.
Yep.
So even when they were scoring, like, I would turn to my dad sitting next to me, and I would say to him, it's almost like you hate – they scored so fast. Like, that K-State defense was just kept getting put on the field even when K-State was scoring. You were just hoping they could suck it up and get one of those stops where K-State could get the score extended back out to two-plus scores, two-possession game. And fortunately, in the fourth quarter, they were able to do that.
What do we make of 9 a.m. right now having as high as the fifth-best Heisman odds in the country, depending on where you look?
I respect a hell of a lot of what he's doing right now, and he's playing at a very, very high level. But I will say that seems like Vegas protecting itself in case he really takes off into the stratosphere a little bit. So I think it's inflated, just Vegas being kind of protective of it because – I mean, if Kansas State goes 11-1 and he continues to play at this level, yeah. It's the same way with Jalen Daniels. But they're probably saying Kansas State's more likely to go 11-1 than
Kansas. I was going to say, because he's now surpassed Jalen Daniels in terms of
– which I think because as much as we hate it, and I'm a Heisman voter too, but, I mean, a lot of times win-loss record does play a role.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. The recipe for him to win it would be that they would have to run him like 21 times a game like he did at Oklahoma, and I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're unwilling to do that.
Keep going 350, at least 350, at least three touchdowns every game, total yards. Yeah.
But considering, I mean, let's just take a bit of perspective here. It was, what, two weeks ago or 3 weeks ago that we sat right here after the Tulane game and we're halfway legitimately kicking around the idea of like how long is the leash on Adrian Martinez before
mentality's
power to Jake Rubley, and now all of a sudden 2 games later it's he's top five Heisman odds country.
Yeah, I mean that's college football this year. It's really weird. Every time a group of five team beats a pretty good power five team, they lose the next week to a similar group of five. It's been a wacky year. It's the volatility is still at a high level right now. We haven't found equilibrium in college football yet.
Well, shout out to Tulane, huh? Big win, third string quarterback, overtime on the road at Houston. Dana Holgerson's like fighting with his fans, you know, from down on the sideline after Kansas made his players fight with each other. So, you know.
I mean, look, that Tulane defense is really good, guys. I mean, they won that game with their third string quarterback, which I know most Kansas football fans aren't familiar with because they don't follow college football and didn't realize Tulane was playing with their third string quarterback in that game. And we're trying to do the comparative scores analysis that KU won by three scores and Tulane took overtime, which is not the way to go about it. If you're wondering, Kansas football fans, that's not a good idea to try and venture down that path. So, I think Tulane's probably going to be an 8 or 9 win team. And I know a lot of Kansas State fans continue to point back, what Tulane game, it hurts so much. I just am trying to, on the optimistic side of me, I look back at it, I think, maybe that was the turning point in the season that has triggered this offense to waking up. So let's say Kansas State wins that game by 7 instead and doesn't lose. And I'm not a guy that says, you know, you learn in losses. I'm not a moral victories guy when you lose games like that. But if that was the key to turning this season around, then I'll gladly take that loss at Tulane if it means Kansas State can get to Arlington. And I'm sure most Kansas State fans would as well.
Totally agree. Cole, be nice to Kansas fans. Okay, look, Clemson and Georgia were both on the ropes there, which would have really helped out their playoff chances, and didn't work out for them. So it was a rough night. And now the Wisconsin job's open, Nebraska's open. I mean, look, let's be nice to them. Okay, there's a lot to worry about. As George Kliavkov would say, there's a lot of grenades coming in. A lot of grenades coming in that they got to worry about. So, okay. Defensive line deserves a lot of praise here. We've talked a lot about the offense, and rightfully so. That's going to get a lot of the attention typically. But the other way K-State won this game, in addition to the explosive plays on offense coming back, it was the fact that the defensive line was just dominant. You had 6 sacks in the game. Felix and then Khalid Duke, you know, who was rushing the passer a lot. And Chris Klieman talked about after the game how much his eyes lit up when they told him that was going to be a part of the game plan this week. That pass rush looked awesome on Saturday and made Donovan Smith's life pretty hectic most of the game.
Yeah, I would agree. Sorry. Kansas State actually just offered a 2024 in-state kid. So that's the third one of the cycle or second one, just the second. Junction City. How about that? But in terms of the pass rush, Felix and DK Zama, Khalid Duke, they combined for 6 sacks and Felix forced a fumble too. Right. And that, I think it tied the school record for career forced fumbles already. That's how much he is an animal when he gets after the quarterback, enforces turnovers when he does it. Just really good fundamentals. He creates havoc. It's not just the sack. He's going for the whole thing, the whole enchilada. But Khalid Duke, I thought that was the biggest takeaway for me. Not to take what Felix does for granted, which I'm about to do, but seeing it from Khalid Duke, I think, was the biggest factor because if you have him return to form or exceed his prior form and right there, right alongside Khalid Duke, takes the defense to another level. It's another thing to account for. I'm sure a lot of that will be predicated on how much more of a load the Desmond Purnell can take, that you can maybe walk Khalid Duke down to the first level a little bit more and have him rush the passer. So Desmond Purnell's development is probably going to be key in that. But, I mean, not just that, right? Nate Matlack, 26 snaps. So he's on the mend. A lot of good signs all the way around. I'm sure the question will come up, but Eli Huggins, I'm told he's fine. He's going to play next week. He'll be available. He'll start. So that's fine. Same thing with KT Leviston. He'll be back. He'll be starting. So the injury front, everything seems to be headed in the right direction too.
Wait, D.Y., are you saying people were doubting that KT Leviston would be back? Are people doubting KT Leviston? Because he doesn't like being doubted.
He don't like being doubted. No,
he don't like being doubted.
Yeah, I think he just got poked in the eye.
Okay.
Yeah. The biggest takeaway for me was Duke. on the defensive side of the football, like you guys, just that he's showing signs of getting back to his 2020 form and before and early 2021 form before the knee injury. There was one play where he just put the left tackle on his butt with a simple bull rush and pancaked him to the ground and sacked the quarterback. And I like the thought of third down and long, obvious passing situations of him, Nate Matlack, and Felix on the field going after the quarterback at the same time and kind of salivate at bringing all three of those guys. And I think you get through this Iowa State game and you got the bye week. And, you know, Nate Matlack's clearly getting better in terms of health, but that bye week, you can get some of these guys to 100%. I think the pass rush will take off to another level with that, and we'll see Nate Matlack start to take off because so far this year he doesn't have a sack. Now, again, he's hardly played the last two games before against Texas Tech, so that's part of it. But yeah, I think the Duke thing is huge. And one play I'll point out, guys, that probably is big for Khalid Duke's confidence on his knee coming off this is there was one time they brought him and he nearly got to the quarterback and Taj Brooks, the running back, cut block him at the knees. Yeah. And Taj Brooks actually got hurt on the play. But Khalid Duke popped right back up on his knees. And I don't know if he's been cut blocked since that knee injury, but I know that, you know, you're flying in and a guy cuts you in the knees like that, that it's probably a little bit scary for a guy coming off the injury he did. And the fact that he was able to pop right up, I'm sure that does him well with his mental mindset and confidence on that knee, having taken a shot there now on a cut block situation.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's interesting you mentioned that because I definitely remember the play now, and I remember when I watched it, like, kind of holding my breath, like, ugh, goodness, like, you just... The way Khalid is playing, you don't want to see any issues there at all. But, yeah, I mean, rest of the defense, D.Y., how do they grade out to you? I don't know if you've had a chance to rewatch the game, but we're talking about the secondary in particular. What did you think against Texas Tech?
Yeah, pretty good. But here's the thing. You give up, four touchdowns, and you feel a little worrisome. Especially since you did let them climb back into the game. I know that they were put into some tough spots, but you're still kind of letting them go. They did get gassed, and they just didn't have an answer there for probably a stretch or a sequence there, just like the offense didn't have an answer because all the momentum was on Texas Tech's side, both sides of the ball. I felt like they needed a big play, and then they eventually got them. I will say they're opportunistic. I mean, you turn them over on downs twice. You forced two fumbles that you bounced on. I think you picked off two passes. If you count the turnover on downs, it's six turnovers. I know those don't count, but they should in the statistical category. I don't know why those don't count. That's always been my kind of quibble with the way they record those things because I think that's a turnover. It's literally called a turnover on downs. Julius Brents finally got his interception. I think he's always around the ball, but typically doesn't get it. He finally got it, and they almost took it away because there was an inadvertent whistle, I will say.
You know, what the hell was going on there, man?
I have no idea. They could have wiped that away. Obviously, we're glad that they didn't. But, I mean, I'm not too proud to say that that play shouldn't have been allowed.
I
agree. Like, if I were a Tech fan, I mean, I would have been, rightfully so, I would have been livid. Now, they were still down two scores.
I don't think it would have made a difference. But, yeah, that should have been wiped.
Yeah, what was the back judge? I was in the southwest corner of my seats. The back judge, I thought, blew a whistle and came running in while the ball was in the air, signaling – clocks out, and then he acted like he did. Like, it almost was like, "Oh, I didn't do it." Like,
I don't know. That was the thing.
Nobody seemed to fess up to it. You know, they're all over talking.
I mean, Joe McGuire was losing his, you know what, and he had every right to. That was poor.
Well, and I was wondering if it was a reviewable play, if they could go back and listen for the whistle or not. And I was just thinking of the Lincoln Riley play at OU, cries for 10 minutes on the sideline, and then they're finally, like, after a 10-minute delay, they're like, all right, we're going to review the play, and then they'll change it, just like the onside kick. That's what was going through my head. And I was like,
yep. That came to my mind too.
I didn't have any interest in Tech scoring and making it a 2-point game, guys.
No.
With another onside kick. All right.
No.
So that was a pretty big play. Let's be honest. And finally, Julius Brents gets an interception. Now, felt good for him. Probably one of his tougher picks that he's had the opportunity to get. So he was due. In fact, I feel so bad for him because, you know, he should have had a pick probably earlier this year. And Sincere Mason kind of took it from him. And then the Austin Moore pick on Saturday, where it felt
Austin Moore is like just diving, like where he's not even in the picture, just dives and catches the ball. And I don't know if Brents would have caught it because it would have been a tougher catch too for him. But I mean, Austin Moore made that more complicated than it maybe it needed to be. And talk about a guy that's playing his his butt off. Austin Moore,
He's
the state's best linebacker right now.
Oh, he's really good. Is Daniel Green dinged up? DY? He doesn't look so. Quite.
He was in and out of the. He was in and out of the injury tent during that game.
Yeah, he doesn't. And this isn't a knock on. I think Daniel Green's a hell of a football player. He doesn't look quite the same as what we saw last year and flying around the field. And so I'm thinking maybe the bye week could do him some good too.
Probably. I agree. Yeah. I agree. What game was it? It was Oklahoma, wasn't it, Cole? Where we were sitting there next to each other, like, is Daniel Green in the game? Has he been playing? Like, you just didn't notice him out there.
Yeah, well, this is Oklahoma. I mean, the linebackers are going to get exposed more against Oklahoma than any other team. I will say that. And I thought he came up in the box and banged a couple of the running backs pretty hard against Texas Tech. I thought he actually played solid against Texas Tech, but he did come off the field percentage-wise because there was a lot of plays. But he came off the field more than usual.
It's not that he's playing poorly. It's just, you know, I have such high expectations for him. I'm used to just seeing him all around the football constantly,
right.
And it doesn't feel quite the same. And I will say, it feels like Nick Allen the last two games has gotten a significant amount of snaps at the linebacker position.
I mean, Daniel Green almost did have a pick six against Tulane.
Yeah, he's got two interceptions on the year for a linebacker. He's been really good in coverage, too. Gavin Forche got some playing time on Saturday as well. They brought him in for a couple series.
So. Yeah, and I heard. I'm trying to remember what did Kleiman say about that post game. Basically,
they need for they're trying to get him, you know, ramping him up to play, you know, a certain dosage of snaps because they're wearing Austin Moore out as much as they have to play him.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Which, hey, man. Again, I know we just said it, but shout out to Austin Moore. Like, I did not think that dude was
doubted him.
As good as he, I did, man. I did. I'm sorry, KT Leviston. I don't like being doubted. Austin Moore could, you know, throw that back in my face.
He's playing at an all conference level.
I was just about to say that. I was like, isn't he like an all conference linebacker right now?
He might be.
Really, really solid player. Kind of falling in that mold. Didn't Jonathan Truman have like 150 sack or a tackle season at one point?
You know? Sacks. Yeah.
Truman. Yeah, Truman did. And let's be honest, he's playing much better than Truman did too. He's been all
conference level right now. We'll see where it sits at when the season's over. But I mean, he'd get a vote from me, that's for sure. And maybe another thing to point out, if we're going to stay on the defensive side, and shout out to Chris Nelson because he brought this up. The safeties were the question mark of the team, and rightfully so. In the offseason, they were going to start three guys that, you know, we had never seen play football before, right? And this is, I think, as accurate an assessment as anyone can make. Safety's better this year than they were last year.
Oh, yeah. Safety, great. I feel great about safety.
Drake Cheatham.
Kobe Savage.
I think Drake Cheatham, maybe a little bit of a rocky start. He's coming along just fine now. Sincere Mason's getting healthier. I know he barely played against Oklahoma. I think that probably went a little under the radar, and then his snaps increased against Texas Tech, so that was a good sign. I think TJ Smith was really good against Oklahoma. He had a couple plays he'd probably like to have back against Texas Tech, but he's still playing better than he was last year too, even though he was beat up last year as well. And then the two safeties that are just kind of blowing me away is Josh Hayes and Kobe Savage. Those two do not take a playoff, and they let you know when they hit you, and they collapse fast. They play hard. They play fast. Their closing speed is, or at least right now, let's hope they stay healthy because it's at a very high rate.
And can we talk about Kobe Savage shooting a shot with a Texas Tech cheerleader in the end zone?
I think, yeah. We saw that. Yeah, we saw that. He definitely did. Blew her a kiss, at least. And she was pretty receptive.
She seemed pretty flattered or smitten, you know. Yeah, it was, yeah.
Shout out to Scott Pufall. Scott, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your last name. I know we've interacted on Twitter. Yeah, you're the one that went viral with that tweet and got picked up all over the country with it. So, yeah. And I saw Kobe Savage's dad comment in the replies as well. He had a great line, and I can't even remember what it was.
I thought he just said chip off the old block.
Yeah, but then he put like a hashtag of something to do with Savage. I'd have to go back and look at it. It was good, yeah. Kobe Savage, a heck of a football player. To your guys' point, the safeties have been great, and the depth at safety is deeper than they've been in a while. I mean, they've got five guys, really six if you count Nikendre Steiger, that played.
He's out. It's VJ Payne, right?
Oh, yeah, VJ Payne. VJ Payne. Well, I was just thinking Steiger played the first couple of games.
Yeah, I don't know if he's played since South Dakota or Mizzou, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know how I forgot about VJ Payne. Well, then, heck, if you counted Steiger, you'd have seven. But, you know, you've definitely got six that you're rotating in and out, which is pretty big for this defense to have that type of depth and quality depth at that.
Timely for Kobe Savage because he was our conversation last week.
That's right.
Yeah.
D.Y., I know you were at the game. Did you happen to see Kleiman's interview heading into the locker room at halftime?
I heard about the nut up comment, so I like that going on air. That's
we got it just without hesitation, missing a beat. We've got a nut up in the second half.
I mean, he was right, and from all accounts, according to his description of it, they did everything. Him and Deuce, and I think Adrian commented on it too. They did everything, but basically say that he lit the offense's ass up at halftime. He basically just like ripped into them, I think. And seemed to be just what the doctor ordered. I think Colin Klein's adjustment was probably also just what the doctor ordered. But I would like to hear the audio of that halftime speech because I think it was pretty electric.
I would imagine it gets the players' attention pretty quickly because Klieman typically
not that way. Yeah, that's not his speed usually.
That's not what he's doing. You know, I mean, he's not flying in there yelling every single week. So, yeah, warranted, and it works. And
he also undressed that ref one time, right? Because I wasn't watching it on TV, so I don't know what they saw, but it sounded like him and a ref were basically looked like a Major League Baseball manager and an umpire just going at it.
So he was Matt Campbelling the ref, is what you're saying?
When he was trying to get that timeout to get that review after the fumble.
That's right.
Well, John,
the ref Matt wouldn't give him a timeout at first.
Matt Campbell actually uses timeouts to just rip refs. That's his strategy. So he did it at Oklahoma, the Big 12 championship a couple years ago, and he did it this year. So yeah.
I saw a shout out to Scott Chasen, who does a great show on KCSN. I saw he tweeted during that game that he was like, has Iowa State gotten a sponsor yet for the Matt Campbell blow up of the game, like the Matt Campbell official blow up of the game? So it's not just us. It's not just us that noticed that. Everybody else notices it, too. Going back to that. I don't know that I've ever seen anybody lose it as much as Matt Campbell lost it in the Big 12 championship game a couple of years ago. So,
well, it's hard because my son likes to watch college football with me, but we can't watch Iowa State games anymore because he learned so many bad things from Matt Campbell and he set such a poor example for my children that we can't even, it's not even safe to turn on the TV. We have to watch the game on delay with him. And, you know, if he says something, I have to turn it off. So, It's really hard because we love to watch Big 12 football, and he's ruined some of that for us.
Well, I know, and Cole, I know you work very hard to create a five-star culture in your home, and this is really taking down your five-star culture at home. So I know that's tough.
We don't say things like that in our house, and you know the way that he behaves sometimes is just repulsive on the sideline. And you know, sure, when the clock ran out on Saturday and my five-year-old Brody, as Happy Trails was playing, waved, "Bye-bye, Texas Tech. Time to go cry to your mommies." And my friends looked at me and they were like, "Wow, that's pretty intense." I did not say that. He learned the whole cry for your mommies thing from somewhere else. I did not give him that. He has learned.
Maybe Texas things. Tech people listening, we have no disrespect.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, listen, I do not endorse that statement. I do not endorse
that's
that.
Brody.
Yeah, no, that is my son. Not, I don't even endorse it, guys. I like you, Texas Tech fans. I like your program. I like everything about you. In fact, I think you might be my most favorite fan base in the Big 12, outside of Kansas State, obviously. So, no disrespect intended. That's just him running his mouth. We'll get that straightened out. I think he learned it from Matt Campbell, probably.
Texas Tech and Oklahoma State. I like those two.
I do too. Yeah, I've got nothing nothing against Oklahoma State at all. Which this is a good lead in to where I was going to go with this next. I mean, we're sitting here now. K-State's 2-0 in Big 12 play. Seems like the Tulane loss is in the rear view. You do have this game with Iowa State coming up, but if we look at the landscape of the Big 12, like where do you feel like K-State fits in to what's a pretty wide open Big 12 with, I would say, Oklahoma State and TCU probably deserving top billing right now as 1 and 2 in the league. And then, I mean, after that, is it K-State? Where are you fitting them in? How do you reckon what Kansas is doing with what K-State has done? I'm not here for a conversation about the rankings. I just, look, they're designed to do what it's done is just generate a bunch of conversation. But if we're talking about legitimate Big 12 favorites, where do you think K-State falls in the pecking order right now?
Man, maybe I'm off kilter because I think you kind of opined there on maybe how you see it. Man, I see about 4 or 5 teams on the same top tier. It's that balanced to me. Like, I'll put KU up there too right now. I mean, until their offense is stopped, which I know it was against Iowa State.
Their offense was stopped on Saturday, but Iowa State.
But then all of a sudden,
Iowa State apparently spends zero time on special teams because.
Right. And I know Iowa State's offense is not very good, and Hunter Deckers is a statue and easy to sack. I get that. But man, I didn't think KU's defense was still capable of holding them to 11 points. Right. Or even if they get those 3 field goals, that's only 20. Like, I didn't think KU was capable of holding a Power 5 defense under 20 points or offense under 20 points. That means, so that counts for something. I'm not sitting here to say KU's going to go 10-2, 11-1. I mean, I would still say no to that, right? But they deserve respect right now because when their offense was finally stopped, their defense won a game, and that matters.
Yeah.
I
agree. I mean, I totally agree. There were 2 takeaways to me from that. It was that, well, I guess 3. One, like, I just didn't realize Iowa State's offense was that bad. I mean, I had not sat down and watched like an entire game.
Their running back was out too, to be fair.
Yeah. He came back in. He was like, he was hurt at the beginning of the game, and then is Silas, is that the kid's name?
No, Brock. John Brock got hurt early, and he never played again.
Okay.
He's week to week, so he may not play against K-State. They said they're going to get him back.
And he's good. He's good.
He's a good. He was averaging 5.6 per carry. So if he's unavailable for Saturday, that's big because they're pretty.
There's a big drop off from Brock to Silas.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Touche. I stand corrected on that. But yeah, to me, it was that one, Kansas's offense is not invincible. You know, I mean, I think that was the positive, like, hey, maybe Iowa State has figured some things out there. But if you're talking about Kansas and the development of their team and their program, yeah, being able to win a game when it's not just Jalen Daniels running and throwing all over somebody is, you know, I mean, that's going to help the confidence of their team this year. So yeah, I think you can definitely spin that positively, but at the same time, I look at it like, I don't know. I thought Jalen Daniels was going to do that to literally everybody this year. And so that at least gives you more pause on that front.
Yeah. I mean, that was a program win. It was because their defense won a game. That I didn't think they were capable of doing. Oklahoma State really hasn't been challenged yet this year.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I know you guys are not DY. You're not real high on Baylor. I mean, I still think Baylor's a pretty good team. And I mean, they went in and Baylor gave them a run in that third quarter for a little bit, for the most part. That was Oklahoma State.
Oh, I still have enough respect for Baylor that what Oklahoma State did to them is mighty impressive.
Very impressive. Especially in Waco. Very, very impressive.
And in Waco, right after Baylor had their way with Iowa State in Ames, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, but every week is different. You gotta take that into account too. You get stunned by a little something every week. I'm not – The only one I'm actually dragging my feet on a little bit more than other people, and I know you'll disagree because you've been high on them, is TCU. I'm still not sold on them.
What do you mean? You went to Colorado to cover against TCU, the worst team in college football.
Well, but after that happened, and now he's like TCU's biggest cheerleader. So,
well, no, I'm just saying. I mean, look, they're unbeaten, and then just, I mean, look, if we're gonna tout K-State's win over Oklahoma, my God, look what they just did to Oklahoma.
Well, no doubt about it.
I mean, they belong. I'm not saying I believe in them long term to win the league, but where we're at right now.
Their resume speaks for itself. Again, it's those four we just talked about. It's Oklahoma State, K-State, KU, TCU, and I probably still have Baylor in that group.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing I would throw out too, and I hate doing it, but Texas does have two losses. Only one of those is a conference loss, and they're about to get Quinn Ewers back, it sounds like, and even beyond that. I mean, Hudson Card had a really good game. It was West Virginia, who I think we can kind
of – They're still a threat for Arlington.
Looks like the worst team in the league. But, yeah, Texas, and they're about to get, you know, this beleaguered Oklahoma team. I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe without Dylan Gabriel.
I was going to say, is Dylan Gabriel going to play on Saturday? Like, so Texas could easily play their way right back into this if they're going to be focused and not – do Texas things.
The only thing I think we know about the Big 12, and we'll let Cole talk. He hasn't talked yet, I don't think, is I think West Virginia is the clear 10th team in the league right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I actually thought they would be competitive in that game at Texas. So I was taken aback a little bit when it was 28-0 because West Virginia, the line actually moved from West Virginia plus 10 to about plus 7.5 when Ewers was ruled out before that game. I thought they'd be competitive, and they were not at all. So that was disappointing for West Virginia. I do think they're probably the worst team in this league. You know, TCU, what they did was incredibly impressive. To caveat it, I mean, they did knock Gabriel out in the second quarter. I think TCU would have won big probably no matter what. It might have been a little closer. I think OU scores more, obviously, if Gabriel's not hurt. But that defense for TCU has been better than I expected, and they're so balanced offensively. They ran for over 300 and threw for over 300 against Oklahoma. So that game in Fort Worth, which I'm going to be at as a fan in the stands, is going to become much bigger than I initially expected. But it really sets the stage for the significance of, you know, when you look at Kansas State, this Iowa State game, and they're all going to feel big from here on out because you started Big 12 play 2-0, and you know each week is critical to getting to Arlington. But to me, this Iowa State game is such a jumping off point because if Kansas State can go on the road and win and get to 3-0 heading into a bye, they will have knocked out two of their road games already. Tough places to play too. Ames at night. This is not going to be a gimme at all.
Both at night.
Both at night in the prime time under the lights. We know Iowa State will be excited. If Kansas State can win that game and then get through the bye week, TCU has to play at home against Oklahoma State while K-State's on a bye. It's a perfect letdown situation for TCU then having to bounce back. And we know Oklahoma State always plays physical. K-State will be resting, have 2 weeks to prepare. Because of that, I feel pretty good about K-State going down to TCU. Now, we'll see what happens this next Saturday. But if K-State can get to 3-0, man, I really start to think they have a pretty good shot at getting to Arlington.
We talked about this for the last couple of years on PowerCat game day. This is another one of these events. It's that get over the hump game that they've lost every single time, right? Under Chris Klieman, they've never gotten look, they'll have more get over the hump games this year too. Don't get me wrong, but this is one of those that they've lost every time under Chris Klieman, because you get to 3-0. You get a bye week, so you're still – you get into the fourth, fifth week of Big 12 play, and you're undefeated. You know, you're in a good spot. And like you said, you're catching TCU at a good time too.
It's hard not to dream a little bit and think about Kansas State going these 2-0 these next 2 weeks, over a three-week stretch. Oklahoma State in Manhattan October 29th for homecoming and having a potential top 10 matchup by then, top 15 and top 10. I mean,
this is
the atmosphere. I mean, gosh, I just want to see that happen so bad, guys, because I want to see that atmosphere. Not that the atmosphere hasn't been good in Manhattan, right, but it would be at another level, the best level it's been in the Chris Klieman era, if they can get to that with a significant matchup in Manhattan hopefully under the lights. We'll see. But that's the dream scenario, is to win these next two and get to that game. But
yeah, maybe you're the night game on ABC or something, but with our luck, we'll probably be the big noon kick on Fox.
Yeah.
Well, I'm taking it 1 week at a time, boys, because, you know, this is a big week.
This is the get over the hump game.
And not only that, but I mean, as I was so kindly reminded by Iowa State fans, Chris Klieman has lost two games in a row to Iowa State by a pretty rough combined aggregate score. I understand.
This is a one game.
I understand 2020 aggregate, yes. I mean, but Iowa State really controlled that game last year, too. I mean, that was a pretty disappointing.
Well, because the first play was a touchdown.
I mean, just right from the get-go. They controlled that game. That was a disappointing one last year. So this is a game, like, look, Matt Campbell last year had the team with all the experience, all the talent. They were like K-State last year. Remember that preseason All-Big 12 team last year? It was littered with Iowa State players that have now since gone on to the NFL. This year it's K-State that led the league with all those players there. They came in and smacked K-State around, even though they went 7-6 last year. They came into Bill Snyder Family Stadium and won. Like, this is a game that you need to go get. Like, this is a game that you should win. You've got the experienced team. You got the veteran team. Iowa State looks like they're in shambles right now. You've got to go get this game. Got to go get it. So just a quick thought there.
Well, John, I haven't decided if I'm going yet still.
I was about to ask.
I go back and forth on this. I saw the poll. You got over 500 voters, and it was like 87%.
You have to listen to the people, I think.
Can they start up a GoFundMe then to buy our $70 tickets? Gosh, why is it $70 to go there? They're 0-2.
Cole, have you seen the price of Super Bowl tickets these days?
No, that's a good point. Oh, good point. Yeah, that's true, John. Well,
have you seen the price of the hotels too? I don't think you guys have planned ahead.
Well, no. That's not the move anyway. The move would be you drive like an hour outside of town at least after the game.
I'm in Des Moines.
Well, okay, but I mean, we've stayed in like Ankeny before. It was always a pain. John, it was always a pain.
I'm in Altoona, which is, I think,
but I think we would call at least maybe even 2 hours. Just find a spot on the highway after that.
Look, John, you know what I would do? You've been with me on road trips before. I'd push us all the way back to Kansas City at that point because it's only a little more than 3 hours. I mean, I'm not going to pay for a hotel room if I'm already only an hour out of Kansas City at that point.
My hope is no one is sober enough to drive.
They don't sell bourbon, I don't think, in Jack Trice Stadium. So I don't
just Bush Light. Just Bush Light.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We got to figure out where the K-State section's at.
Let's do it. Let's do a quick little breakdown here. You know, and 3 Mile listeners, maybe you can try and influence us throughout the week. You know, on Twitter at @JLKurtz, @Cole_Manbeck, whether or not we should do this. Because I will admit, Cole, I'm on the fence a little bit too. We did get a veiled threat from an Iowa State fan on Twitter yesterday,
and then he deleted the tweet. So when I asked him, what do we deserve, he deleted it. So I do feel like he was probably threatening us.
I know.
Your life?
Well, he said he hopes that John and I get what we deserve at Ames on Saturday. And I go, what do we deserve? And then he deleted the tweet.
Maybe it was just an L. Maybe you deserve
No, felt like a threat.
Frankly, I was just happy to have some company because usually I'm the only one on the dartboard, but now apparently you've earned a spot on the dartboard as well. So good work.
Well, good work. Yeah, I think it all goes back to our, being on Cyclone Fanatic, making our appearance there. And that really helped get me on the radar when they emphasized my last name like 8 different times on that podcast. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see, man. Part of me is like, it'd be like we all just get together and watch it at a bar in a basement. It was also
very fun because it was very fun to do that for Oklahoma.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, part of it is like, I'm also torn because I want to be able to take my entire family to go see the bridge, but it's one of those like once in a lifetime opportunities to be able to see that. And for them, like for my kids to be able to set foot on that piece of concrete would be a really special moment, but they're not leaving the Big 12, so we could do that in a couple years too, maybe in 24 and
you
go
could
back
do it
there.
For the basketball game this year.
We could. You know, I'm trying to plan some vacations to Ames, Iowa, just to because I want to go at night too, because I don't know if you guys heard, it lights up. They put lights on it, so they installed lights and the bridge glows in the dark, which is really just incredible technology that they've got there. That's where I'm torn. Hey, we got a segment coming on Thursday's show, guys, on that topic that I think we'll have a little fun with. John and D.Y., I don't even know what's coming, but
I'm saving most of my ammo for just the I got to see the outcome of the game, man. I got to see the outcome of the game. I don't know.
And you'll have 2 weeks to bask in it, too.
That is right. That is right, man. It's going to be 2 weeks if it happens. That would be great. I'm torn too, Cole, because, I mean, one, obviously just the inherent risk of, like, it's a night game. Like, how far is it from KC?
3.5. Yeah. For you, for downtown, it'll, you know, you're in downtown KC, so it's about 3.
Okay. You know, I mean, either way, so like a 3-hour trip. God, that's making it more tempting. I was thinking more like 4 or 5. All right. So like a, you know, you're 3 hours away. And then if you lose, that's just like a long drive back at night. Like it's very high risk, high reward, I guess is what mm-hmm. I'm saying here. Mm-hmm. Very, very high risk, high reward. And the other part that factors into me is like, I mean, I just did 10 years of this where it's like traveling to every single game and always traveling by car. And I'm just like, I'm a little bit over it. You know, I mean, it's cool being there at the game, but the travel really wears on you after a while. And I was hoping to take a step back from some of that, but I'm also feeling very compelled to be at this game too. So I don't know, man, I'm pretty split.
Yeah. It'll also be my 8th straight weekend on the road if I go, and then I'm going to Fort Worth. And I'm sure my wife will like try to make me go to a pumpkin patch or something on the bye week, you know? So that's going to be my life.
With the girls.
What do you vote, DY?
You know, I want you guys there.
Yeah, he's in the press box safe with.
You're not safe in that press box.
You're not safe from leaky water.
Actually, I'm not even sure if that thing's structurally safe, but.
No, actually, I don't want you there. We're 1-0 on the road when you don't travel.
So we need to go to Tanner's and do another
show? You got to go to Manhattan.
That's true. We do. We're going to have to bust out another live show. All right.
If that meant K-State went 5-0 on the road this year, I'd go to Tanner's every time.
I would too. I would too. No doubt. Okay. Well, to be continued, we'll let you know. Maybe we'll have an answer by the time the pod comes out on Thursday. Maybe not.
Probably
not. See.
Well, my wife says no. Like, she's like, no, you're not allowed to go, because she's seen me around Iowa State fans. And she said she could come on and attest, like, I'm not someone that's going to fight people, but she said the only time she's ever seen me nearly actually get in a physical altercation with a fan was Iowa State at the Big 12 tournament. So they bring out the worst in me. Definitely.
Really, see, they don't even bother me that much in basketball, but.
Oh, they bother me in basketball because of the Big 12 tournament. Like I was drinking a beer at Power and Light, and one of them came up and knocked the beer out of my hand when I was talking to my parents. So yeah, that's, they're really lovely.
Well, when you're on a trip to Sandals, Kansas City, Cole, you know, I mean, stuff.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
You know, maybe that's about time to wrap her on up. Thank you to Holiday Distillery, 360 Vodka, Ben Holiday Bottled and Bond Bourbon. We appreciate their support as always in helping bring you the pod. We'll be back at it once again on Thursday with the preview pod for Iowa State. So until then, we bid you adieu. Appreciate the work of Jed and Tucker behind the scenes, for Derek Young, for Cole Manbeck. I'm John Kurtz. Thanks for listening to another 3-Ball.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.